Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Canine Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 Kelvin to keep a sinful out of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, John?
Indeed I can.
Feel so naked without our music. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCAT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCAT.org. Yeah. So we're back. I'm here. I feel like I haven't been on the mic forever, man. It's been like almost 2 weeks since I've been here.
Same here.
Yeah. We had last week off because it was Christmas Eve. And I don't even think we got an option on that one. I think GCN told us, yeah, nobody wants to show up.
Yeah.
Which is fine with me. I wasn't gonna actually do the show that night anyway. But tonight, I mean, I don't really care about holidays, any holiday for that matter, with the exception of maybe St. Patty's Day, because, well, I like excuses to eat corned beef and get drunk. But
this used to be my holiday because it was my excuse to do drugs.
But, well, yeah, it used to be.
The past couple of years, I've just been sitting at home the past couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. So it is New Year's, I guess, for both of us officially. We're in the new year. If Michael decides to show up in the next hour, we'll get to tease him about being in the future because he's not quite there yet. But we'll see if that actually happens. I think he's been avoiding me. He keeps claiming that he's too busy, but I think he just doesn't want to do shows with me anymore. I don't know. But yeah, anyway, so we're here. It's New Year's. And I, like I said, I don't really care about holidays necessarily. But when Michael asked originally if anybody was, you know, wanted to do a show tonight, you know, even though this is our normally scheduled night, I was like, I have to be on, because the one thing, not that I care about New Year's, but today, well, now it's officially the next day, I guess, but we're still counting it as New Year's Eve, because I haven't really slept yet. Today is officially my 2-year Fiendiversary.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. I've been here 2 years. 2 years ago on New Year's Eve, I got an email from Michael asking me if I wanted to become a permanent member of the team, and, you know, very exciting stuff. I've joked about the fact that I was going to frame that letter, and then I went back and looked for it. For some reason, that's the one email I can't find from him. I have like every other email Michael ever sent me, but for some reason I can't seem to locate that one. But yeah, it was a little over, well, yeah, now a tick over 2 years ago that I got that email after Lou had graciously asked me to join him on a couple of shows and then abandoned me on my first show for like 5 minutes, and I had to do it all by myself.
And, that's hard, dude. It is tough.
Yeah, I learned very. I mean, I do solo shows, and I did before that point too, because you know I do my own, I have my own podcast, and I've done solo podcasts before too. But those are usually have prep for those. You know, I usually have like a little outline I've written, or maybe I've done a run through once, and then I decided I wanted to just redo it, and I scrapped a video or whatever it is and start again. And but yeah, being on live radio for my very first time ever, and having my co-host just disappear because he had internet issues, and me just going, all right, so here we are. I mean, luckily, we were about to start reading an article, so I just picked up there and started going through it. But yeah, 5 minutes seemed like 5 hours because I was all by myself, and I was very conscious of the fact that I was supposed to keep talking, because the one thing Lou had kept reminding me of is, you know, 6 seconds. After 6 seconds, the warning bells go off, so you can't be silent. And in my head, I kept just going, just keep talking, but don't curse. Just keep talking, but don't curse. Just keep talking.
Yeah, that's what goes through my head most Sunday nights.
Yeah, so, but yeah, that was, I mean, that was fun. And then I never heard from Michael after that. So I kind of, I just assumed, because we had never spoken before that. I think we had exchanged an email maybe once, when Lou had originally asked me if I wanted to come be a guest host with him one night. And, you know, maybe we had crossed paths on social media or something, but I had never really spoken to him before. And then after I did that show and survived, and then Lou asked me to come back like a week or two later and do another show with him, I was all, you know, leading up to the second show, I was all kind of psyched because I was like, oh, I've been asked back. This is a good sign. You know, I'm sure I'm going to hear from Michael now, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to, and, you know, and maybe he'll ask me if I want to become a Fiend, because for me, that was a huge thing back then, because I had been a Fiend fan for, you know, a year plus at that point. I had gotten kind of friendly with Lou because we had had him on my other show, The Seeds of Liberty, and him and I got to talking a bunch, and I got to know some of the other Fiends a little bit, and I was like, oh, this would be so great. And then there was nothing. And like another week went by, and like no mess, like not even like, hey, thanks for doing the show, thanks for filling in, you know, just nothing. A radio silence from Michael. And I was,
if
so
you did something wrong, you would have heard about it.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Being a fan, that's what I assumed, because I knew that he ripped those on the air. So I was like, I'm pretty sure I would hear about it if there was a problem. But like, he didn't even say anything. Like when he was if he came back and did a show, because that was, you know, that was 2 years ago when he was still pretty sick, so he wasn't doing a lot of shows at all back then. But when he came on, he still didn't mention it. And I'm like thinking, oh man, like I was that unmemorable that he doesn't even want to mention me. And I started to get depressed. And then all of a sudden, New Year's Eve, 2015, an email pops up and it's from Michael. And it was just, it was like, hey, listen to you doing the show. You sound great. You want to be a Fiend? And I was like, I was just like flabbergasted, because here's the email I've been waiting for. And then when it finally came, I didn't know what to do. I just kind of stared at the screen for a while thinking it was a joke. But
that's awesome, though.
Yeah, it was. And yeah, you know, I know a lot of people have questioned me since then, maybe why I stick around after some bad things have happened to other hosts. And, you know, I even got fired once, and Michael and I went through a bad period last year. But I keep coming back, and I'm glad to keep coming back, because, hey, man, I to this day, I still look at it as like one of those things I get to say later in life that, hey, I got to do radio for a couple of years. And regardless of what people want to think of this medium and the jokes that get made that nobody uses radio anymore and stuff like that, you know, we even make the jokes about the only people that listen to us are grandpa and grandma and stuff like that. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I still look at it as, hey, man, I get to talk on radio, and that's pretty darn cool. So, yeehaw for me.
Indeed, man.
Yeah, so yeah, I missed the Fiend last year. I can't remember. I think New Year's ended up not falling on one of my normal nights, and then I think they ended up not doing a show last year. So when the opportunity arose this year, despite me being tired, despite my being in physical pain, because I did something to my neck again, so I'm like, I spent most of the day today on my couch with a heating pad around my neck, feeling like the grandpa that I usually am told that I am. So it was quite fitting.
That's rough, man.
Yeah.
What resistance. I'm almost there, too. That depresses me.
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, I did something to it last year. And I think I've always had, well, maybe not always, but for quite a long time, I've had some type of issue with my neck, whether it's a nerve or a disc. I'm not actually sure, because I've never actually had it officially diagnosed, because, well, I don't have a lot of money, and I don't have insurance. So, I mean, of course, of course I have insurance, but they lifted that thing now. I don't have to say that anymore, right? The individual mandate's been banned or something or whatever. But, yeah, I haven't had insurance. I think since I turned 18 and got kicked off my parents' insurance, I think I've had insurance for maybe 1 year since then. So one out of 22, almost 23, because, oh, geez, yeah, man, I'm about to turn 41. Oh, gosh. So, yeah, I've gone quite a long time without insurance. So I'm very picky about what I spend my money on when it comes to my health.
Yeah, I know the deal. I went without it for a long time, too.
Yeah, so, well, you had even more severe situations that would make it bad for going without insurance, but
luckily I got it, like, or I was forced at gunpoint to get it, like, a year before I got cancer.
Oh, gee, thanks, Obama.
Yeah, thanks, government. I still ended up having to pay god-awful amount of money, though.
Oh, I'm sure. I can only imagine.
Oh, I'm still paying.
Yeah, it's usually the way it is. But yeah, I don't know. I did doing stupid stuff as a kid, and even dumber stuff as an adult. I'm sure I did something.
I was gonna say.
I'm sure I did something to my neck at some point. But it, you know, it would always. always just be kind of like one of those things that you wake up one morning and it's kind of stiff and achy, and you know it'll last like half a day, and then it finally starts to loosen up, and then it's all right. And you know that would happen maybe a couple of times a year, so it was no big deal.
Stress, man.
It could be, but it just always felt like it was some kind of, you know, nerve disc type thing, just the way, because it would happen, it would get tweaked, and then it would happen. So I was just like, I just kind of rolled with it for years and was like, you know, whatever, I'll deal with it when it comes. And then last year.
Yeah,
Oh, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say.
I was going to say the.
All right, you go.
Well, nah, the only reason I was saying that is because when I was younger, I had this issue where I woke up one morning and I was super stressed out about getting my report card because I knew I was going to get grounded. And my neck was like stuck in an L position when I woke up, and I had to go to the hospital and get all these shots and stuff. I had this crazy muscle spasm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and my head was stuck, tilted, like, sideways, and I was walking around like that, and I couldn't move it for days.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, my parents made me crazy.
Yeah, mine was definitely not as severe as that, but, yeah, mine started, like, last year. Actually, it was almost around this time, maybe a couple weeks later last year, where I woke up one morning with this type of thing, and I thought that's what it was, and then it never went away. To the point where I actually went to a chiropractor for the first time in my life. And I got some chiropractic work and some acupuncture and some physical therapy and all that stuff. And it hurt like heck for the next two. It hurt even worse for the next 2 days.
Oh, yeah.
But then after that, everything felt great. And it was good up until about a week or two ago. And then it started again. And I'm sure stress has something to do with it, but it might be a combination of stress
and something.
Yeah, and the neck issue, and you know, my sleeping schedule, I'm sure it doesn't help. I know I find myself waking up sleeping in weird positions all the time. I thought it might have been the pillow I bought, because it was starting to happen, and I thought maybe my pillow had finally, like, you know, been worn out enough that I needed a new one, so I got another one, and that didn't seem to help the problem. But yeah, man, today was just I don't know. I woke up this morning, I could barely move. Like, when I actually have to break the heating pad out, you know things are bad. So, but I'm here anyway. And we're going to take a trip to the market, and we'll come back and talk some more about this.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
White trash well around here. Yeah, we're back. We're talking about this lovely weather during the break and how wonderfully chilly it is. Not. Although I'm currently sweating in my house. It's really weird. I was telling John during the break. I've talked about this before. I live in one of the original Levitt houses here in Levittown, New York, which is considered the America's first suburb, which was mass-produced after World War II, done relatively on the cheap. Guy bought up like half of this county and ended up just plotting this town out with three styles of houses, built up the entire town in a matter of months, and did things relatively cheaply. So like there's a mixture of there, it's like the weird, like the walls, like even the interior walls of the house, it's the weird in between before sheetrock became a big thing and after plaster was the main thing for how, you know, they used to do the plaster with the wire mesh inside of it. Is how they used to build the walls back in the day, and then they finally got around to sheetrock. Well, this house was done in some weird in-between thing where there's like, it's not
asbestos
quite
asbestos or what?
No, well, there was asbestos tiles on the floor when I bought the house. I don't think there's actually asbestos in the walls, but it's like this weird, it's not quite sheetrock, it's not quite plaster, but there's like newspaper shoved inside somewhere too as insulation. And you know, the people I had bought this house from were not the original owners, but they were basically the original owners, because I think they bought it like 3 or 4 years after the town was built. So they were technically the second owners, but owned it the whole time until I bought it from them 10 years ago. And, you know, they made improvements here and there, but nothing crazy. And the oil burner was relatively old when I got here. So, you know, between not the greatest insulation in the world, the fact that I live in essentially the middle of a wind tunnel, because I live on a curve of the road where everything gets blown down from the northwest side and can also be blown down from the southeast side, and everything ends up getting pointed at my house. So like everybody's garbage in the neighborhood, their garbage cans, if they don't secure them on a windy day, pretty much anything ends up in either in my front yard or stacked up nicely next to my garage as everything continues to blow. So with all that type of stuff.
Excellent design.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's beautiful. And you know, I mean, granted in the summer, it's kind of good because I can open all the windows in the house and we get nice airflow. So it cuts down on the need for air conditioning as much, but in the winter, it's kind of a pain because even if there's a slight wind, when that cold air comes whipping through, you know, even with a house in your way, when there's like holes all over the place that you can't see, and even though like my dad and I replaced all the windows and we made sure to, you know, insulate them as like over insulate them, you still feel those drafts when you get close enough. It's like crazy things happen where, you know, I was telling you before we came back for the break that, you know, I have my temperature set up my house. Usually it's six, you know, I drop it down to 68 at night. So we're not, you know, using that much of the oil. But some night, you know, some mornings I wake up and when the temperature kicks back to 70 or 72, whatever I have it set at, it doesn't take that long because it's only a couple degrees below. Other nights, like a couple of days ago, I woke up and it still said that it was supposed to be 68 in the house, but the temperature had dropped down to like 55. And but it's not like anything turned off, because I went to go turn on the hot water and the hot water was still working, and as soon as it drained enough, the boiler kicked back on again and everything. So I'm like, it should have kicked on all night. What happened? No explanation. So it just goes from being crazily cold to wildly hot, which it is right now, because I left the temperature at 70 on the main floor because I knew I was going to be up here and awake until about 4 a.m. doing the show and then then doing the edit afterwards. And for some reason, even with it only at 70 and a window open behind me, I'm like sweating sitting in my chair right now.
That's insane, man.
I know, it's just crazy. It's like, and you know, I feel bad for my poor kids. I don't even know what to do about them up there, because they have their room sits kind of over the boiler room. So most of the time their room stays warm without me having to turn on the heat on the second level, because all that, you know, the heat rises and it just kind of goes up the old chimney way right next to their bedroom and keeps everything warm. So like for the longest time, you used to have to open the windows at night, even in the winter, for their room. Now, all of a sudden with the heat being freaky like this, like I found out, I got woke up this morning to find out the kids had been freezing because the temperature dropped in their room and I had no way of knowing. I just need to get out of this place, man.
Can't come soon enough.
Exactly. But maybe we'll get back into that one. We return. Arms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert, so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers, so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form: crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
break. I was, you know, remarking that I just need to get out of this place. And then we were talking more some more during the break, and I was realizing all the other weird, you know, weird things that are wrong with this place, because I mentioned the asbestos tiles that were in this house when I bought them. There actually are still some of them. They're actually the only ones left in the house are in the room that I'm currently sitting in. Because when I bought this place, actually it wasn't before I bought it. When I came to look at the place, I remember coming to the place, going around the back of the house, seeing the size of the backyard, and deciding right away that I wanted to take it, because again, I was already living in Levittown, and I knew by looking at the front of the house that the house that I was looking to purchase was going to be exactly the same as the one that I was renting on the other side of town, because it's the same exact setup, and kind of like the TV show Weeds from Showtime, you know, little houses all on hilltop. Well, they all kind of look the same. That's kind of the way this neighborhood was built, and obviously it's changed over time. People have updated and stuff, but you still find a couple of the houses that are more original like, and mine is one of those. So I remember when I finally stepped inside the house and looked in the living room, and then looked over the setup. I'm like, yeah, this is pretty much the same setup of the house I'm renting, but there was. I mean, this place, like I said, this place hadn't been updated in a while, thanks to the older couple that had lived here for decades and decades and decades. And not only was there still wood paneling on all the walls, like in the kitchen and the living room and stuff like that, but there was actually the orange and yellow shag carpet in the living room. And
did they have like the green and orange flowery wallpaper?
No wallpaper, but the two bedrooms that were for their children, apparently, you know, eons ago when their kids lived here, one was that weird greenish, like 70s color, with a pink carpet. But not a wall to wall carpet. It was like it was a remnant that was cut to size, so it wasn't tacked down or anything. So it wasn't like it wasn't actually you know, fully carpeted. It was just kind of like basically having a giant throw rug over the entire thing. And then the other one was Pepto Bismol pink with with a green carpet. Yeah, those were the two rooms. It was very bizarre.
Wow.
But having already been running my dog business, you know, the place that I was renting out before I bought this house, I knew I was, you know, I was buying the house for my business. So carpet was just a no-no in my line of work, because when you have tons of different dogs coming into your house, and you've also made a name for yourself taking in the problem child dogs, taking in puppies where a lot of pet sitters won't because they don't want to deal with the messes, it's like carpet's a no-no. So I immediately went to one corner of the room during the walkthrough and peeled back a corner of the carpet and saw that there was tile underneath. And I was like, oh, perfect. I'll take it. You know, I could just rip this carpet out. We got tile already. We're ready to go. Yeah. Then I bought the house and proceeded to rip out the carpet and then found out what tile was actually underneath. Because all I saw was this kind of, you know, kind of cool looking black tile. And I'm like, I could dig this. I could live with this. Having no clue what it was. Once we pulled the carpet up and I had some people come and help me, they're like, you know what this stuff is, right? And I'm like, no, what? It's a tile. They're like, yeah, this is asbestos tile.
Oh my God.
They don't sell this stuff anymore for a reason. And
it's messed up.
Oh yeah, it's horrible, because it was, you know, these tiny little, I guess they're 1 foot square block, you know, 1 foot square tiles, and or maybe even shorter. I'm looking at them right now. They don't look like a full foot. They might only be like 10 inches. They're some weird size, but anyway, they covered my living room and the two bedrooms downstairs, which I was going to be using for dogs. And I thought I could, you know, I was like, well, all right. You know, asbestos. I remember asbestos. You know, I remember my elementary. I remember my elementary.
Hey, asbestos.
Yeah, I remember my elementary school back in Pennsylvania being shut down when the state came in and did testing and found out that the asbestos levels in our school were like off the charts. And, you know, a whole bunch of us have been going there for a couple of years.
That happened a lot of places.
Yeah. So we had to leave the school, and then they ended up shutting the entire thing down and building us a brand new school. Like, that's how bad it was. So I was like, oh, I remember that stuff. Yeah, that's not good. I'm probably not supposed to have that around. I should probably rip that up. So I went looking into it. And, you know, there's like, oh, there's crazy like OSHA regulations and everything. Like there's a specific way these things are supposed to be disposed of. You're supposed to be wearing all sorts of, you know, ventilation gear if you're, you know, if you're working with them and everything. And, you know, here I was, you know, just under 30 years old, having my first house with a business that was already in full swing. That I was just literally trying to shift to a new location. And I was like, I read all this stuff. I listened to people's advice. And I'm like, yeah, I don't got time for none of that. So I called up a buddy who already had a variety of health issues. Anyway, he was always a mess. And was willing to take certain risks as long as there was money and or the promise of beer involved.
Oh my God, I know the types. Those are the types I hang out with, actually.
Yeah, so I got him to come over, and the two of us spent like a day and a half with scrapers and everything else, and, you know, pry bars, and just went around and just ripped this entire place to shreds and ripped all the tile up. I mean, luckily, because it had been put down, obviously, you know, decades before that, and it just been kind of sitting under this, you know, the shag carpet, and this is Levittown where there are no basements, so everything's on a slab. These things were just glued to the slab originally. So half of them came up without much effort. Like they would just actually just an entire tile would just pop up if you touched it, which was great because it was like, oh, this does not work. Other ones would break. And then like, of course, like one corner would be like glued, like stronger than the strongest, you know, gorilla glue you'd ever seen. And we'd have to work at it. But yeah, we did the entire thing in like, I think under 2 days. I think we might have had those cheesy little dust masks on, like the painting ones you buy. if we use that, you know, we were stopping, taking smoke breaks as we're doing it and stuff. Like we were just a mess. Like how, like I'm sure I did some crazy damage to myself by inhaling all that stuff, but whatever, I got it done. But yeah, man, that's I was remembering that as we were talking about that during the break. That and because you mentioned something about asbestos, which is a story we actually get to. But the other thing he said was lead paint, which is another thing I have in my house. The ceilings were painted with lead paint.
Better watch out, man. You don't want to end up like me.
Well, see, that was another thing. I went and looked when I bought the house, after I found all this stuff out, and just the average painter, you know, will charge you to scrape out the lead paint and repaint it is insane. And it's not because they want to necessarily. It's again because of the regulations and everything involved and how you're actually supposed to dispose of this stuff, which of course is, you know, horrific on one side, kind of funny on the other, because people had this stuff in their house for years and the government kept going, it's fine, it's fine, well, it's fine.
All the projects in Baltimore City still have the lead paint. And that was apparently the issue with Freddie Gray, why he was all messed up in the head and stuff. And especially in his neighborhood was when it was like, they did those like epigenetic studies, and his neighborhood was like one of the worst areas in Baltimore. And Baltimore is pretty widespread of just lead poisoning, and like people are pretty messed up from it. And there are tons of I'm sure every city there's tons of crazy people like walking around the street like yelling things, but I've seen some crazy stuff in Baltimore.
Yeah, I've heard stories. I haven't been back there in a while, but I can imagine. Yeah, I don't know, man. I never thought much about it necessarily, because I guess I focused more on all the jokes about it. You know, when people would refer to the lead paint, it's like, you know, if you're eating the lead paint chips, it's like, well, I'm not eating it. I'm fine, right? You know?
Yeah, it's really crazy to think of, in Flint, isn't that the problem with the pipes, right? They were made out of lead?
Something to do with that. They made them on the cheap or didn't replace them, or I can't remember if it was Flint or there was another city, because I actually read something and I'd have to go look it up. And you know, we all know how much I hate looking stuff up during a show, so I'm not going to actually do it. But I remember reading something recently that Flint is actually not the worst situation in the country as far as water goes.
Oh, yeah, I wrote that.
But,
that's right.
Yeah. That's what we're talking about. Yeah. not even by a long shot, right? But yeah, it was that. Wasn't it the other one that they tried to flush it, but they used the wrong chemicals to flush it, and that actually made the situation worse? Because it was corroding the pipes even more.
Yeah, Pennsylvania and New York were like some really bad areas too.
That's right. That led us to the discussion of my obsession with drinking water that tastes like metal, because that's how I grew up.
That
obviously, if you're drinking water that's, you know, that has the lead leached into it, yeah, that'll definitely do a number on you. But the paint itself, from what I remember, I don't think the paint can actually hurt you unless you ingest it. I thought that's what the deal with it was. But I'm sure it's giving me some kind of, you know, doing something. Although on the bright side, that can keep out the NSA, right? Isn't that the whole thing? You put yourself in a lead-lined box, nothing can get in.
I thought it was aluminum.
No, man, that's that's for the aliens, man. That's for the aliens, NSA. Keep the tinfoil for the aliens.
Well, see, I'm not worried about the aliens, and all this time I've been walking around with this hat. I need to put a lead hat on.
There you go, man. You gotta do it the other way. Make one of those cool helmets like Magneto or something, block everything out. But yeah, so anyway, my house is a mess. I probably shouldn't be saying these things on the air as I'm actively trying to sell the place. It's like, yeah, come on, buy my house. Asbestos tile.
It's a death trap.
Yeah, asbestos tile in the studio, lead paint in the living room. It's beautiful, you know.
Well, luckily, the people that'll buy your house are probably statists, so.
Yeah.
So they probably won't hear it.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. And I'm also sure most people that would buy my house would actually, when they get warnings like that, they would go, oh, okay, we should do something about that. Most normal people would actually do, you know, handle things the proper way. Me, yeah, not so much, but, you know, that's what happens when you buy a house when you're under 30, single, and running a business, and you're just worried about making money. we'll be back. Worms.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Well, almost too busy talking to you on talk radio. I was in mid-sentence and I realized that there's silence coming. I'm like, that means we're coming back for a break. I should probably stop now. So, yeah, I think we're done. We're done bashing the house that I live in. A caller.
Am I on the air? Hello? Am I on the air?
Hey, oh my goodness! Who let this guy on the air?
My name is Rupert, and I'm calling from Kern County, California. This is the Alex Jones Show. Good. I'm glad to be on. All right. So, you said it is Jeremy Hengler. Are you that guy that doesn't like cops?
No. See, you've got it all wrong. Firemen. I hate firemen, remember?
Why do you hate firemen? That's what your taxes pay for. They're good people.
Yeah, well, you know what? They shouldn't get in my way when I'm trying to work, man.
Okay, I agree. You're right. I'm convinced. Where do I sign up to vote for the Libertarian Party like you guys do?
Oh, vote for the Libertarian Party. That's funny. I don't vote, man.
Vote or you can't complain.
Oh, see, now that's just silly. I can complain anyway. I got the Kvetching Award in fifth grade. I'm allowed to complain whenever I gosh darn want.
Wow. So I'm here in Kern County, California, with my 45-acre marijuana farm. It's going to become legal tonight. You know about that?
You know, I heard about that, but then I also heard that they were still busting people today. Well, now yesterday, because you're actually calling. You're calling us from the past, aren't you? Because we're in the future over here.
Yeah, it's still 2017, and I can't give out my undisclosed location of my 45-acre marijuana farm yet because I'm in California and it's not legal for another hour and 6 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, you better be careful, man.
I think they're still busting. They're going to bust unpermitted ones. But, you know, permits are good because the government needs to keep track of all that stuff. Right?
Yeah, that's always a good thing. That's exactly what you want. You want them to know everything that you have at all times, yeah. So they know exactly what they can take from you.
They protect you.
What's that?
Who's your host? Yeah. He sounds cute, man.
He sounds cute. John.
Oh, my God.
John?
Yes, that's...
Where?
Sounds cute, man.
What part of California are you from?
Kern County. Up near Oregon. We like guns and weed up here, you know. But we vote Democrats to protect us.
That's a good start.
Trump's evil. What?
I said, liking guns and weed, that's a good start. Have you ever seen a movie by a name very similar to that? Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom? You may want to check that out.
Yeah, it was showing at that weird hippie art house down the street. I don't know. I went down there and sold guns and weed in front of the place, but I didn't see the movie. Because, I don't know, those people are a bunch of hippies.
You got a problem with hippies?
Oh, she's stupid.
You're on a 40-acre weed farm. How you got a problem with hippies?
I'm a complicated man, Sean.
Complicated. Well,
you hate your customers like that, man. You need them.
I don't know.
The dope man needs the fiends, yo.
I sell it to the mafia, man. I sell it to the mafia, and they sell it to hippies. I don't deal with them.
So wait a minute.
I don't even care stuff. It makes you stupid. I mean, it
so you sell it to the government?
You stole the words right out of my mouth, John.
No, not that mafia. The other mafia. The Italians from Long Island. You know them, don't you? Sean,
yeah, no.
That mafia is still around.
They don't come out this far anymore, man. They hang out in Brooklyn and Queens and stuff. They don't travel out to the island.
They're all on oxygen. They're all old.
Or in jail.
Or in jail.
Unfortunately,
or dead.
You know.
Yeah, or in jail and dead because they snitched. You know.
Well, you know what they say about
snitches.
You said, hey, it sure beats Rikers ratting on them bikers, but then the next week you got off by the very same bikers.
It's a strange world,
They're
man.
Putting rat poison in people's food at Rikers.
I'm not.
You are.
You got a mouse in your pocket?
Hey, wait a minute.
Banana.
You guys know about cell phone 1-1? Everyone should use cell phone 1-1. Even if they're
hitting. Yes.
Is that where you call to get information? Like phone numbers?
Yeah. It's where you call to call your friends and send the cops when the police come to raid your pot farm. Get cell411.com. It's free.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you for that sales pitch. Yeah, see, folks, this is why we don't have callers on the Freedom Fiends anymore.
I called the number on the site somewhere.
I don't know.
All right.
We're going to have to get that changed.
He hacked the system, I think.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BipCot NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's BIPTUNIA. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. Biptunia.com.
Welcome back, everyone.
Yeah. We're going to have to talk about that now a little bit. We should probably do an intro. We're here. Yeah, this is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from somewhere. Libertarian re-education camps. Yada, yada, yada. Low orbit ion cannon. Pipcot.
Alpha Centauri.
Alpha Centauri, Pipcot. All right, there we go. So now we are officially back. We're here for the second hour. I'm still Jeremy. That's still John. And we are cracking ourselves up over here on this New Year's show. I was just telling John about this story. I was going to try to find it, but we all know how much I hate looking stuff up on the air. Maybe I'll look for it during the break and I'll send it over to you, John. But there's a story my buddy Jason sent, or he tagged me and a couple other people in this morning on Facebook. And it was a body cam footage released by some police department. I believe it was somewhere in upstate New York. I forget which town it was exactly. But it was a squirrel attacking cops inside somebody's house. And it was just one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I mean, the video itself is only like 17 seconds. And I'm forgetting the story already because, as we were discussing in the first hour, it's been a very long day for me already with everything that's going on. But basically, from what I recall the story, it was, I think the owners were away from their house, and either through closed circuit cameras or the alarm getting tripped or something, they thought somebody was breaking into their house. And when the cops entered, they heard rumbling, like they heard stuff being moved around in the pantry. So they thought, you know, they thought there somebody was breaking in, you know, maybe a homeless person or somebody breaking in trying to steal food or something. So they went in, and I'm pretty sure they had their guns drawn, but they didn't, you know, luckily they didn't start pulling the trigger right away, as a lot of cops want to do. But when they pop into the kitchen, you just see the body cam footage. And like I said, it's only like 17 seconds, but you see this squirrel all of a sudden appear on these people's kitchen table, and it starts like it's like running back and forth. And when the cops start talking, the squirrel notices him and like leaps across the table and the counter in front of him, and like it bounces to the point where you see the body camera shake. So it's literally like the squirrel took off and tried to drop kick the cop in the chest. It's one of the funniest things ever, because then the thing just takes off and you see the camera just spin around, and the cop's like, "Where'd it go?" And they have no idea what to do. But I just found it so humorous, because it's like, you know, attack squirrel essentially.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it was definitely a fun thing to wake up to this morning. It was one of the first things I saw after I got up. But yeah, that's why we were laughing when we came back for the break, because yeah, it was pretty funny.
I got mesmerized watching this squirrel the other day, like doing these acrobats, like out in the trees, 100 feet above the air, man. It was like the day it snowed, and there's like just sticks 100 feet in the air, and this thing swinging back and forth, jumping around. I was just staring out my window.
They are very interesting little creatures. The only time they see them all the time, obviously, but the only time I really pay attention to them is we have ones here that like to torture my dog, because, you know, we live on Long Island, so we have those lovely above ground power lines that run behind your house, between your neighbor's house and yours. So there's just like a giant set of power lines running the entire length of your backyard, and the squirrels will run back and forth across them. And, you know, normally most squirrels will use those as, you know, easy access points from tree to tree and stuff like that if the tree is too far away and they can't leap to it. But the squirrels in my neighborhood quickly found out that they could pretty much tease all the my dog, and then back when I was having my business here in full swing, like all the other dogs that would stay here.
Wow, that's crazy.
I'd let the dogs out in the backyard, and you know, I'd usually be out there with them unless it was just my dog or dog, like my dog and other dogs that have been with me forever that I knew I could trust together and leave out there alone. But like if I had dogs out there, like if I ran inside to, you know, go to the bathroom or something, all of a sudden I hear like crazy barking, and like I go run outside to see what was going on. And I, you know, the first couple of times this happened, I didn't see anything. And I'm like, you know, I thought, you know, first maybe I thought they heard a dog in like the next yard or something, but I'm listening and I don't hear them. What are these guys barking at? And then one day I finally realized that a lot of them were, especially my dog, who was freaking out because she was doing it when she was by herself too. And I'm like, what is going? And I realized she was looking up. And when I looked up, there I saw the squirrels up on the power lines. And it was like, they would run run, instead of running back and forth from tree to tree, they would just run and like halfway and like kind of just sit there. And it was, you know, I'm obviously, you know, giving squirrels probably a little too much credit, but it really looks like they sit up there and mock the dog, especially my dog, because she'll like run at the fence and jump and obviously get nowhere near the power lines. But the, you know, they just sit there and like kind of like wave at her and like almost
throwing
like
throwing nuts at her.
Yeah, blowing raspberries at her and stuff. But yeah, they love to torture the dog. They just they hang out up there because they know, you know, it's like, you can't get me. Because I mean, my dog tries.
Pretty smart, man.
Yeah, I mean instinctually, sure. I mean, like I said, I don't think they're actually making fun of my dog, but it makes me laugh to think that they are, you know. But not that I think my dog would actually know what to do if she actually ever caught one of them, because I've watched her try to chase the rabbits, because that's the other thing we have, even worse than squirrels, is we have like rabbit infestations here, because there's a couple of sumps in the neighborhood. One of them is like only like a block and a half from my house, so it just get, you know, government land that's you know, sectioned off, that you're, you know, nobody's allowed to go in there, but then they don't even go in there very often to like clean it up or keep it mowed down and stuff, so wildlife just like explodes in those areas. And the rabbits are just insane. I mean, the amount of, like, it really is like you can wake up in the morning and look outside, you know, most of the year, and just see like, you know, 4, 5, I've seen as many as 10 rabbits just chilling on my front lawn. Just, wow, all hanging out.
We don't even have them out in the woods like that.
Oh yeah, no, it's crazy here. Like I know there's a rabbit thing like on Long Island as a whole, but it seems to be very concentrated here in Levittown. I don't know what it is, but I've watched my dog chase these things. And I mean, now she's 10 years old. She has some knee issues. She's lost a step or two, but she's still pretty quick. But even back in her heyday, when she could go full speed, I'd watch her chase these rabbits all over the yard. And, you know, they're quick and they're pretty smart. I mean, relatively. And they figure out where the holes and where they need to go all the time. So you watch them just dart back and forth and just duck under a hole really quick. And then the dog slams headfirst into the fence because she doesn't have brakes like they do.
Some like classic Tom and Jerry kind of,
yeah,
situation.
So I've watched, I think that's why she gets so mad at the squirrels, because she tries to catch the rabbits and then she can't. And then she sees the squirrels like not moving and she tries to get them and then she can't. But like I said, I don't even know if she would know what to do with them, because the only time I've seen her ever get close to another animal like that is when I had another dog who used to come here for daycare, who was, she was a weird mix. She was like a beagle bulldog, some, like, we don't really actually know what she was. I mean, she was a rescue dog, obviously, and she was a bit dopey, and she was kind of chubby and didn't move fast all the time, but apparently she could when she wanted to. And she caught a rabbit one day in my yard, and I ran out there to go grab it from her, and murder dog was kind of just like circling the whole scene, like getting near to the rabbit and then backing off quickly as soon as she got near it. I mean, it wasn't like the other dog was like growling at her or anything, but she didn't know what to do with herself. So I don't think she's really actually a threat to any of the animals, which I guess just makes it even funnier for me. You know, maybe I should feel bad for her, but it doesn't make it even funnier for me when she chases them or when she gets harassed by the squirrels, because it's like, you're not going to do anything. Why are you even trying? I mean, I know it's like an instinctual thing. You think you have to chase this, but it reminds me of my another dog I had when I was growing up. It wasn't actually even mine. It was this little Jack Russell, one of the few dogs that I've ever come across in this earth that I just could not stand after a certain point, because this was a dog my uncle had actually stolen this dog way back in the day.
Wow.
I think the statute of limitations are more than up on this, so I think I can tell the story. But way back in the day, my uncle was a landscaper out in the Hamptons. And, you know, during his during his routes and whatever, he came across this one house he would come to all the time that was basically doing backyard breeding for Jack Russell Terriers. Now, I have my own issues with backyard breeding in general because it's usually not done very well. I mean, I have no problem with people wanting to breed their own dogs and sell them for profit as long as they're taking care of the animals. Like, I bought a dog for somebody years ago in a situation like that. It was this couple down in North Carolina, kind of out in the sticks, borderline trailer park area type stuff, but you know, very nice people, and they were breeding, you know, they were breeding boxers, but they were only doing one litter at a time. And despite how not exactly you know, spiffy everything looked around the outside of the house, the dogs were kept clean, everything was like, and like, they were, you know, they were doing all, you know, following all the normal procedures and stuff like that. So like, if people are doing that, I don't care. But normal backyard breeders are the ones that have like essentially like a mini puppy mill in their backyard, and they're literally just in it for profit. They don't care about the health of the animals. They don't care how many times they breed the dogs and whether it actually does any damage to them or stuff like that. So people like that, I obviously have a big problem with. And from all accounts from my uncle, this operation was kind of like that. You know, they were clean-ish, but they were, you know, they were, the people were just not very nice in general. And he, you know, my uncle went there a number of times, and he kept noticing this one dog who was always kept off to the side. And he found out through like asking questions and stuff that because this particular Jack Russell came out with like this weird corkscrew looking tail and had an overbite, she was considered, you know, defective because they couldn't get top dollar for her. And they would essentially just like, you know, they treated this dog rather badly to the point where he, my uncle was convinced that they were going to, you know, end up killing this dog. So he snuck back one night and stole the dog.
Good for him, man. Good
yeah, I was, him. You know, I was very proud of him. But unfortunately, he could not keep the dog where he was currently staying. So he asked my grandmother at the time, my grandmother at the time, if she could just keep the dog for, you know, just for a little while until I move into my new place. And well, Star never left my grandmother's house. She ended up dying there like 12 years later because my uncle just never came back for her. And that's, you know, when I ended up moving in with my grandmother all those years ago, I ended up living, you know, Star ended up living there too. But Star was the same type of dog. She was a Jack Russell who they're bred to be ratters. Like that's kind of their design. They're used to be ratters in stables and stuff like that because they're small, quick as all heck. They have springs in them, I swear, because they can jump. It's insane how high these little dogs can jump. And they're very good at chasing small animals. Well, apparently Star not only was defective, you know, physically, but she was a little defective mentally as well. And I think we'll have to wait till we get back from the break to get into that. Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
And we're back. And as we headed into the last break, I think I was talking about my old dog Star. Should probably finish that story up before we move on to other things. But yeah, I was talking about how she was, you know, she's a Jack Russell Terrier who the dogs are specifically bred to chase rats and stuff like that. But you know, she was a physical freak apparently, because she came out, you know, deformed as far as the breed standards go, which is ridiculous because, like I said, she just had a little bit of an overbite and her tail was a little squiggly where, you know, wasn't up to standards and stuff. But she was so hard, like she, like I said, she was a one of the few dogs that I've ever come across that drove me insane. Although I realized later on that a lot of it wasn't her fault. It was my family who made her that way, because I came here.
Family? It wasn't the previous owners, you think?
No. My family, Jeff, because she was still only like, you know, a year. She was like a year old, maybe a year and a half old when my uncle nabbed her from there. They, you know, my family was not very good about training dogs when it came to certain things, you know. And once my mom and my sisters and I moved up there and moved into my grandmother's house, and then we brought our dog to join with little Star over there, The only ones they would, the dogs would listen to were me. The rest of the family, they would just totally ignore, wouldn't listen to their commands because they had no respect for them. And it wasn't until later on when I got into the dog business and then started, you know, started doing behavioral work and stuff, I look back and go, oh, I was mad at that darn little dog all the time. It was my family. They were horrible.
Oh, man. Because
it was once I got to the point, you know, when I started with my business, I took that whole, you know, the customer's always right attitude to try to, like, you know, try to build up my customer base and stuff like that, and was always very appeasing to people. And then after I got comfortable enough and got enough clientele and had a, you know, strong enough roster of clients, I was just like, all right, I could be a little more honest now. And I started, when I started doing behavioral work, I really had no, at a certain point, I had no problem telling people that it was their fault and not their dogs. You know, at first I would shy away from that and try to, like, so people would want to keep giving me their money and have me come back. But at a certain point, I was just like, no, you're screwing your dog up, man. Because we do. That's one of the things I learned from Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, was that 99% of the time, issues with dogs are a human problem, not a canine one. You know, because we treat them in ways that are not actually dog-like. You know, when people try to humanize their dogs and stuff like that, and you actually do your dogs a disservice. But anyway, so that's basically what they did to this poor dog. So she ended up being a miserable little animal, and it was my family's fault. And, well, you know, anyway, that's a different story. But yeah, so she was horrible about chasing things because she wanted to all the time because it was in her nature, you know, kind of like Cameron. She instinctually wants to chase things, but she doesn't really know what to do. And Star, because she had never actually been trained to be a ratter, she just had the instincts to be a ratter because that's how it works with the dogs. She never really learned what she's supposed to do. So she would chase stuff all the time. And the worst was the cats, because we used to have a bunch of neighborhood cats that would hang out near our house, because we had this one cat that used to be an indoor outdoor, and then eventually became just an outdoor cat and just refused to come inside. So my grandmother always left her outside. But again, because it was another animal that had gotten dropped off on her doorstep by a family member who said, hey, we just rescued this cat, but we're moving. Can you keep her for 3 months until we get settled? And then that person never came back for that cat either, and she stayed at my grandmother's house for almost 20 years. But because she lived, you know, because she was basically our cat and hung out outside and we fed her, all the other neighborhood cats would come over and hang out near our house too. So when you let the dogs out in the yard, Star would smell the cats, go take off after the cats. And there was one of the basement windows had been broken for years. And, you know, we would constantly always try to, like, repair it with different things, but the animals would always manage to knock out the repair because my family never bothered to actually get a new window to put in it. There was always, like, patch jobs of different ways, but the animals all knew that if they could get in there, especially in the winter, they could stay warm, because it was like it wasn't a full basement, it was one of those, like, half crawl space ones, but it was, you know, there it was warmer in there than it was outside. So the animals all knew that they could go hang out at there. And they would also run in there when the dog would go chase them. And the dog, who's a Jack Russell, was small enough to also fit into this miniature basement window, but then once she got in, couldn't get herself back out. So I was constantly having to go downstairs into the crawl space and drag the dog out, usually with her all bloody, because she would chase the cats, manage to corner the cat, and then once she got to that point, had a brain fart and didn't know what to do. And the cat would just beat the ever-loving heck out of her.
Oh my God.
And then run away. But the dumb dog kept doing it over and over and over again.
Poor thing.
Animals. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
About my dogs in the last segment, but I think there was a There's something we mentioned in the first hour. I kind of touched on it briefly because of the topic we were talking about, but it was a story that you mentioned, John. Probably circle back to that just because, you know, don't want to bury any leads and don't want to leave stories hanging since we did mention it earlier. But we were touching on asbestos earlier because of the lovely house that I live in and the asbestos tile that is currently sitting underneath my feet. But then you brought up something earlier, which I had forgot about until you started talking about it. It's like, oh yeah, I heard about that. Apparently there's been asbestos showing up in kids' makeup. Which is a kids' makeup. That's a whole other topic we can get into that I have a big problem with to begin with. But the fact that it already exists, let's start there.
Yeah, but not a. It's poisonous, also.
Yeah. So what the heck? What was going on with that?
So yeah, basically, the store Claire's, the extremely like popular store in the mall, which I guess probably isn't as popular as it used to be when we were growing up. Now that like kids don't go to malls anymore, but
what's a mall, Daddy?
Yeah, exactly. What is that? I don't know what that is. But yeah, so apparently, this woman. For some reason, she looked at the ingredients on the case and it didn't have any. It just said made in China, and it was this mother of this 6-year-old girl, and she happened to be a lawyer, so she sent off it to some lab for testing, and they found asbestos there, and then she. Took, I guess, I think it was 17 was the exact number, yeah. She went and bought 17 other samples of different types of makeup and found asbestos in all them, too. And then Claire's made a statement like, oh, we're sorry, like, thanks for bringing this to our attention. We're going to get rid of all this. And then a day later, they said, oh, we did our own testing and... there isn't any in there, but we're still going to get rid of this stuff just because.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, they say that their tests show that there wasn't any in there, but they're going to get rid of it anyway. Just because everybody's so upset about it.
Yeah, it's funny because when you mentioned that earlier, and like I remember briefly hearing this story. I didn't hear that it was asbestos, but when you said that, I was like, "Is that really still a thing?" Because that's how we started that whole conversation before we got on the air about asbestos in the first place. Because I, you know, remembering back to our childhoods when it was a big thing. But other than still being able to hear every once in a while the commercials for isn't mesothelioma? You get from asbestos? Yep. Yeah, so those commercials.
Mesothelioma.
Yeah, you always used to hear those, you know, they were more prevalent back in the day, but you still catch them on radio every once in a while and still on TV where, you know, talk about it. If you suffered from contact to, you know, from asbestos and whatever, and basically you could sue and you ended up with mesothelioma. But yeah, like I said, I hear those less and less these days, and it always seemed to be for like if you had contacted it from, you know, years ago from exposure, because it didn't seem to be very prevalent anymore. I didn't think asbestos was really around anymore, but apparently the Chinese are still making use of it.
Yeah, and like you don't know, I'm not even sure. Was this put in there intentionally? What do they just mix? I don't know what they do over there, man. And I'm not trying to be like, you know, ethnocentric here, but I don't, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I guess you would, in order to follow this through, I guess you would need a third independent study of these compounds to see, you know, because obviously. Whatever this lawyer, wherever she sent it off to, you know, obviously there was, you know, it came back all positives. It seems very unlikely that Claire's research would be able to come up with, you know, essentially 17 negatives. That doesn't really seem possible. You know, one 70 positives, one seems to be an issue there. I think a third study would be necessary to figure it out further. But I don't know. I mean. If, you know, assuming that the first place that, you know, that this woman used, this, you know, the company that this woman used to do the testing assume it, you know, just going on the assumption that they're on the up and up.
They are, apparently, because they are the apparently the leading lab for that kind of stuff. I did look into that. But, you know, what if this woman has asbestos in her house? What if that's the problem? She's bringing all these things home, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
you never know.
But yeah, well, exactly. But I think that would be interesting. But I mean, assuming that, you know, that it was on the up and up and that was actually found there. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is one of those things that you can, you know, cheaply replace, it reminds me, I was watching an episode of Shameless last night, which I'm still actually a season behind. I'm still finishing up season six. I haven't even got to season seven yet. But there's an episode where Frank is supposed to be making a delivery of cocaine, and he stops somewhere first, and they're filling, you know, they're replacing the every time they take a scoop of cocaine out so they can use it, they're replacing it with baby laxative.
You know?
So kind of the same thing. So, you know, kind of the same thing. Obviously, if you can get it cheap and, you know, it mixes in nicely and everything like that. I mean, you would hate to think that people would intentionally put that type of stuff in, especially for a product that is specifically designed for children. You would really like to think that people are not doing that. But you never know. But like I said, that actually gets in. That brings me, you know, this story bugged me on multiple levels. And I think the biggest level is why is there makeup for children in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, this was a 6-year-old kid.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, okay, yeah, great. She's got this lawyer mother who went through all, you know, who knew the right steps to take and went to have this stuff tested and yada yada yada. But and she went looking for the ingredients. But why did she have that for her kid in the first place? You know, like, unless it was a gift that somebody gave her, and then she, before she went to give it to her kid, she went and looked and then saw there was no ingredients. Like that, you know, that then I can understand. But otherwise, why does your kid have it in the first place? I know my girls, they're 6 years old now, and they're fascinated with makeup because, like, you know, they watch their mom put it on, and they, you know, watch whatever movies or shows that they're into, and they see that, you know, people talk about this stuff. But, and, you know, they want to put on makeup all the time, and I'm just like, no, you don't do that. Please don't start that. Let's not do that. You know, they're so big into makeup. I got them a makeup kit for Christmas. It's pretend. You know, there's nothing like that. Even the nail polish thing I got them, I think it's made out of, like, you know, food coloring type stuff. It's like, you know, you can make your own nail polish, but you're essentially making it out of glue and food coloring. So it's, you know what's in there. You know, it's safe stuff. And it comes off relatively easy because I'm like, kids, you're not supposed to have this stuff. I don't know. Call me a fuddy-duddy. Call me old. Call me conservative. Whatever. It just, I don't know. I've always had a problem with that. Piercing kids' ears, too. That's another thing. Especially babies. It's one of those things that's, even after I became even before I was, and even since I've become an anarchist, always made me want to violate the nap when I see people do that.
Or when they have their kids that, like, they dress exactly like them and stuff, when they're, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. 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 That's irritating, too, on a different level. But that, you know, that I can just chalk up to bad taste.
Yeah,
but the ear piercing thing, like, I remember, like, I think there was talk about it when my kids, you know, when we're talking about my kids, and other people asked me questions, and I was like, hell no. And even if I got looks, I'm like, nope, sorry. That's just wrong. You just don't do that, you know, because why are you stabbing your little infant child with a needle for any other reason other than you think it looks good? You know, you're doing a purely aesthetic thing that's causing pain to somebody else for your pleasure. I'm sorry, where I come from, isn't that called sadism?
Yeah, that's sick. That's sick.
You
man.
Know, so,
I didn't even think of it that way, but that's true.
Yeah, it's just always bugged me. You know, like, my girls.
I never even thought about it, but I haven't really seen it too much. But, like, I. It makes sense.
Yeah, I guess I don't see it, like, often, but I've seen it enough that it's just like, oh, no, that's just wrong, man. And I think it actually goes stem from, like, some of the other experiences I've had, like, even with animals and stuff. You know, we were talking about this earlier about the, you know, whole death thing and how it never really bothered me. And blood stuff, you know, nobody doesn't bother me. And working with animals, I've worked with animals for a very long time. I've seen stuff that I'd rather have not seen, but, you know, whatever. But the one thing that freaked me out when I was working in an animal hospital is when I had to sit in on an ear doc when they crop the ears of certain dogs. And sitting through that, I was like, I'll never do that again. Because it was just like, you know, it was an aesthetic procedure which caused the dog pain, you know, for no other reason.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
You know, so
I
like,
would not be able to handle that.
Yeah, exactly. And I couldn't and wouldn't go back for it ever again. But, you know, it's along the same lines for me when it comes to kids and their ear piercing. I'm like, yes, you're not cutting part of their ears off, but you're altering their body for your purposes, you know? Like, even with my kids, you know, they've asked about it. And I'm like, okay, I'm trying to teach you about self-ownership and stuff, but I still think that, you know, you may still be a little too young that you may not, you know, you may not actually, you know, you may want it to look nice right now, but you may not be ready to handle that pain of it happening. Because I remember back, you know, we were talking about this earlier during one of the breaks. I had my ears pierced way back when, you know, and it wasn't like, you know, agonizing, but it wasn't exactly, you know, a little pinprick either. It hurt a little bit when it happened at first, you know.
Yeah, it's always hard to explain to kids that, like, right now isn't forever and stuff, you know what I mean? And that they'll probably think differently of things as time goes on because they don't have no frame of reference.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think I said it. And actually, I think Jen actually argued with me because she wanted him to wait even longer, if I remember correctly. Because I think I, or no, maybe that was smoking weed that I was talking about with her. Anyway, that's a different story. But yeah, I think I remember saying that, you know, I think I got my first one when I was like 13 or 14 years old. I'm like, sure, when they're 12, 13, if they want to do it, yeah, that's great. But now, yes, I want them to own their bodies, but I don't think I want to deal with them being in pain and looking at me go like I didn't explain it to them well enough the first time. That, yeah, this is going to hurt for a little bit. Oh, the joys of parenthood. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Segment of this last first episode of the Freedom Fiends of the year. I guess because technically, well, at least for our caller earlier in the first hour, you know, it was still 2017 when we talked to him, so it was the last episode of the year for him. First
Who
episode
knows what
of the
year it was for that guy, man.
Yeah, he seemed very, very, very confused. And as I mentioned then, there's a reason we don't take calls on the Freedom Fiends anymore, because that audio is horrible. You know, it was nice to hear from you, Michael. You know, I mentioned earlier that I think you've been avoiding me because we never do shows together anymore. Wasn't exactly the way I was expecting to hear from him. But anyway, so here we are. Last segment of the first show, whichever way you want to look at it. And I don't know. Do we even have any redemption? I've been having so much fun tonight. With this show's just been racing by. What are we looking forward to in the new year, I guess? You know, I guess we might as well touch on the whole new year thing a little bit, right? Because
I guess I'm done with cancer treatment, it seems like. So that's some redemption, I guess, right?
All right, mic drop. All right, you win. Fine. Now we got nothing to talk about. You win, John. I get it. Yeah. No, that's awesome, man. That is awesome, awesome, awesome news. Probably the best news any of us could have going into the new year. So, all right.
Yeah. That's good stuff. A week from now, I have like one more like procedure I kind of got to go through, and then I get to kind of move on with my life. I'll have to go back for checkups and, you know, I'll have to stay vigilant for a while and all that, you know, because with this, you're not, like, really out of the woods ever, but, you know, you gotta keep an eye on things. But I'm through the woods, and it seems like things are in the right direction, and the last scan looked really good, so they feel confident enough to let me get the port out, so I would say that's a good sign.
Yeah, that's, you know, from the experiences I've had in my life with people that have had different forms of cancer, yeah, that's usually a very, that's usually very positive. Because that means they don't plan on needing to stick anything in you anytime soon, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that is great news, and definitely a positive outlook for the new year. Me, who the heck knows? I'm still stuck here. Hopefully, hopefully this year will bring me finally leaving New York. You know, I'm getting
the Empire State.
Yeah.
Or Rockefeller's plantation, as I say.
I don't think I've heard that before. That's a good one, though. but yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. And other than that, I mean, I'm staying as much as I tried not to. I keep staying glued to the screen and looking at the crypto prices, because I think that's where I'm going to keep most of my focus on for the new year.
Yeah, I'm in the game now, so I'm excited to be looking at that too. Even though I'm in for just like a little bit, man, it's cool to, because you know I used to pay attention to stuff before, but when you have something kind of at stake, you pay attention a lot closer, and it's a lot more fun.
Oh, of course, and yeah, I mean, I still think that, you know, it's still pretty early for most people to get in, because as exciting as it's been with the ups and downs, especially the crazy ups of this year of 2017 in the crypto world, you know, not just with Bitcoin, but with all the altcoins that have just surged up and all the excitement that it's caused, there is it's still ridiculously early, because in our circles it's all people seem to be able to talk about, you know, including myself a lot of the time. But outside of our circles, yeah, mainstream adoption still hasn't happened yet. And you know, so as insane as exciting it is as it is right now, it's still plenty early for people to get in. So I think, you know, I mean, sure, are there people that got in much earlier at a lot lower price and are seeing a lot better ROI than somebody like you or I would right now? Of course. But just imagine the people who haven't got in yet, and what's going to happen in the coming year. Because, you know, the way everything's looking, it's going to be really exciting. And I'm looking forward to it.
Worms.
Worms. Well, this has been a great last first show, John.
It has, man. It was cool to spend a New Year's Eve on the radio.
Yeah,
man. I can put that one in the books, you know?
Exactly. I'm glad I said I wanted to do this tonight. Happy Feeniversary to me. And everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for sticking with us again through this whole year. And hope you keep coming back in the next year, because we're going to keep trucking along here at The Fiends. And you can always find more of us at freedomfiends.com. Worms.